Not bad. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. A. Dwight Pettit.
Good morning, Senators. And Coach. So happy to be here with you.
My main man.
Oh, wow. I mean, I was just saying, partner, it's a family. A. Dwight Pettit is, if some of us say we're going to, some people try, some people think, but you went out and did it.
It took me 12 years, but I got it done now.
And it's under the color of Law Family. I'm hoping that he will, with his busy legal schedule, will get out and about as many times as he can. Don't wait to see him. Get the book, and then when you do see him, you can get him to sign it. A lot of people want to wait till you see the author. Well, you know, no. This is it, and the 12 years that you put forth, from what I've read, I particularly got to be honest with you, I jumped through, and I got stuck on the role that you played with President Jimmy Carter. I didn't want to stop. I didn't stop until at least I got that much under me to say it was. I mean, man, you were instrumental.
It was very, very circumstantial how it came about, Larry. But he and I developed a good personal relationship. And how many times do you get the opportunity to do that with somebody who's going to be president of the United States? But even more so, Larry, the interesting part that I try to write about in the book is that Marilyn played such an important role. And historically, that doesn't happen because Marilyn is not considered a battleground state.
Without 10 electoral votes.
Exactly. But in this instance, the Democratic Party showdown occurred in Maryland. And all of the forces of the political, all the political forces in the nation and the Democratic Party came into Baltimore and came into Maryland. And the Democratic nomination of President Carter was really decided right here. And a lot of people don't realize that historical fact in terms of the state and the politics.
Got some wonderful, strong pictures of Dwight as a youngster, Dwight as the athlete, proud to be with his daddy, and so many good stuff in there. But the pictures of your wife and you with Rosalind and the president, and you saw the real Jimmy Carter as he probably went through some good days and bad days as the campaign went on.
Well, we got very, very close to it, and I don't know whether people remember it, but the ethnic purity crisis. He made the statement that neighborhoods should preserve their ethnic purity, and the national media took off and said, oh, this is a racist farmer from Georgia talking about white superiority and so forth. And the campaign was impacted. We thought at that point in time it was going to be derailed. And so I sent him a telegram. He was in Chicago, Illinois, and I laid out what he needed to do to come back from that. At this point in time, we had been acquaintances, but I hadn't been in his inner circle. And he, from what I understand, he got my telegram, read it to a black church, a black political meeting in Illinois, quoted from it, and the next day I got a call, that evening, I got a call that governor at that time, he was Governor Carter, wants to meet you for breakfast at the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. I was knocked off my feet. And next morning, I shoot over to Washington at 7 o'clock in the morning. And Lord and behold, they open the door. And the Governor Carter welcomes me in and puts his arm around me and says, son, thank you so much for the telegram and for your support. And I'll never forget it. And come, let's have some breakfast. And that was the beginning of a very close relationship with a man who would become president of the United States.
Wow-wee, that's all right. As you go through the title, Under the Color of Law, what drove that?
Well, Larry, in the 1860s, after the Civil War, they freed the slaves, but there was a terror on slavery and on the black people throughout this country. That was before the Klan even covered up in sheets. They were hanging black folks, crucifying black folks across the South. And President Grant, people don't realize it, it wasn't Lincoln. President Grant went to Congress and asked for legislation to, in fact, go into the South and establish martial law to combat this ruthless attitude against black people, what was taking place. And a statute was passed, 1983, 42 U.S.C., 1983, as well as criminal statutes, which allowed that to happen. It's called the Ku Klux Klan statute, and that's how it was born. And he came in, and the principal element of that statute is whoever acts under color of law to deprive black persons or persons of color their civil rights, she'll be liable not only criminally, but she'll be liable civilly. And as a lawyer, this is the statute that we use in most civil rights cases to attack and get jurisdiction in federal court. It goes all the way back to the civil rights statute of 1871. And so it became a very fundamental aspect of the struggle in terms of American liberties and liberties for black folks. That was the statute that they used when they got all those millions of dollars against the Klan. Because, see, the Klan resurfaced in the 1900s, and it resurfaced this time with sheets and protection because the political transition had taken place and they thought they were sanctioned in America. But it was this statute which allowed us to, in fact, combat racial attitudes and racial attack on African Americans. Now, the reason this becomes important in the book, because I write the book to sort of less, more or less warn politically African Americans as to what's taking place all over again under the color of law in this nation. When we look at the Martin case in Florida, the right to shoot African Americans without any type of reasons or probable cause, now acting under color of law. When we look into what's happening in terms of the Voting Rights Act being rolled back under color of law by the Supreme Court. When we look at the fact of the attack on affirmative action and the diluting of affirmative action. And so, and we, all around this country, when we look at the criminal laws in terms of mandatory sentencing and just putting black folks in voluntary servitude in prisons and so forth by the thousands in terms of double standards of criminal justice, all of that is acting or happening again under color of law, meaning that it's legally sanctioned by the laws that are being passed. And so we as a people better be and have to be very, very vigilant as to what is taking place in this nation, because this is a young nation. And a young nation can go through political transitions that can go back and forth like a pendulum. And what I'm trying to say in this book is that as a lawyer, I have seen this pendulum swing to the left, and I have seen it swing now back to the right, particularly under Ronald Reagan. And now that change is even taking place more, even though we have been fortunate enough to elect an African-American president. So this book is not only about perseverance of a family, but it's about safeguarding the rights that we fought so hard and died for, that we make sure that we're vigilant in protecting those rights and being very much aware of what's happening in this nation now in 2013.
And also, Larry, he mentioned us. He mentioned the show and us in the book, and I thank him for that. We had talked earlier this morning, Attorney Dwight Pettit, about a foundation, and sometimes that foundation carries you through your adult life and your professional life. It's well known that you're a great, great defense attorney, but it may not be well known that before then you were a tremendous athlete. Talk about that and how that aided you and even assists you today.
Well, Coach, thank you so much. And I must say, too, I had the good fortune of appearing on Coach's show in Washington before the book came out, and we talked to a great extent. I integrated the schools in Harford County, Coach and Larry, as you know. Aberdeen High School, I was the first African-American male that was ordered by the United States District Court to go into that school. My lawyers were the great Juanita Jackson Mitchell and Thurgood Marshall and Jack Greenberg and Tucker Daring. And I was ordered into that school in 1960 by federal court order. Well, the good thing that I had about going for me is when you run into all of that and go home and, you know, the students demonstrating against you and so forth, I talk about this in the book, a lot of breakdown in terms of the anti-civil rights movement is done by athletes. Jackie Robinson, Owens at the civil rights movement, Jesse Owens. And so when I entered Aberdeen, I encountered all the racial hostilities that one would expect. But I was an athlete. I wanted to play ball, and I became a semi-star athlete for Aberdeen High School. So rather than the white kids attacking me and saying, we're going to get this in, I became their in because I was, I'm not, you know, the word that I'm trying to avoid using, right, because right. I was playing ball for the school, and that